All right, so do work on that, committing that to memory. The list of the kings. The list of Israel is one that I think I may have by now. I think I may have that one all the way. The kings in Judah, I confess, I don't quite have that all the way yet. I have in the past, and then I've worked on it again, and it comes and goes. But do work on that, and work on that with your children as well. This is basically what was covered in the first half. And then these are things we have covered for the most part in this quarter. And then finishing up. And we're now, here's where we are now in the reign of Hoshea. Just started in Israel. And we just finished up Ahaz. And remember Ahaz, what characteristic do you remember about Ahaz? The Bible points out about him. Anyone? The most wicked yet, right? The most wicked king that Judah has seen yet. And he's compared even to Ahab, right? In terms of how evil he was. And then following him is Hezekiah. So now where we are, Hezekiah is reigning. And Hoshea is reigning in Israel. And Hoshea is the last king. So this morning we're going to see the end of the kingdom of Israel. Now, remember that some of Israel has already been taken away captive, right? There wasn't, as you study the story, you don't get the idea that there's this one fell swoop, boom, they're gone, right? The way it goes is, remember on the east side of the Jordan, they took those away captive, and then they took some of the northern tribes through Galilee. So it mentions specifically the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun are taken away. And then, you know, the Phoenicians are controlling the coastal plain up in the north. So, and this is, we've seen, like way back in the days of Jehu, right? We've seen how that the kingdom expanded to nearly where it was in the days of Solomon and David. And now it's just collapsing. And there's really, at this point, not much left except for Jerusalem and Samaria. Other than that, there are a few other cities in Judah, a few cities in Ephraim and Manasseh, but it's a very small portion of the land, and the rest is controlled either by Assyria or some other enemy of Israel at this point. You know, some of the Canaanites, the ones that they didn't drive out of the land when they should have years ago. So that's kind of where we are. The kingdom has shrunk completely. Hezekiah is now reigning in Judah. Remember anything that Hezekiah did from last time? Yeah, he did. And we're going to look at more at that today, right? Take in? Yeah, he took down the high places. Again, that's what we're going to look at today. Took down the high places. And then just before that, what does the text say about it? You remember a big event. Big event. I know Freddie remembers. I see him smiling at me. A big event from last time. Do you remember?
Passover.
The Passover, right? The Passover. Did they do it in the on the 10th day of the first month, like the text said, back in Exodus 12? No, they didn't. They did it in what month? The second month, right? Why? Yeah, the priests weren't clean. Do you remember that? So there was this effort to cleanse the priests, purify the priests. And so they did celebrate the Passover. And you'll remember what Hezekiah did is he sent message out just in Judah alone? No. Where did he send the runners out to? Yeah, even up all the way up to Dan, right? They sent message out there. Now, what was the reception? Do you remember that? The reception of those messengers from Hezekiah? Yep, exactly. Most ridiculed, right? Just laughed at them. We're not going to do that. But a few from those tribes actually came and observed the Passover. Very good. Very good. So one of the things that's you know, interesting, if you look back at this list of kings, right? We've got we've had a line of good kings before Ahaz, right? We had Amaziah was the first one, and the comments made about Amaziah that he did good, he did what was right according to his father David, except what? Say again? Yes, well, actually, it says he did good except the high places. Do you remember that? Except he didn't tear down the high places. Uzziah, there's a little bit more of a commentary on Uzziah. Uzziah, I believe it says, he did good under the leadership of Zechariah. Okay? And then we have Jotham, who was Uzziah's son, and he did good except the high places, right? Now, what about Hezekiah? So, I think that's an interesting thing, because there have been these three kings. Now, Ahaz, again, would have undone a lot of the good that could have been done. But I think with Hezekiah, what we see here is a much stronger leadership from Hezekiah. Hezekiah was committed. He was determined. He served the Lord with his heart. And he had this ability to lead, and he was determined to restore the worship of God. He was determined to get rid of the idols in the land. And so even though we had good kings who followed God as king, they didn't have that same commitment that Hezekiah did in terms of enforcing that and the determination to really do true reform in the land. So I think that's certainly something interesting to point out about Hezekiah and the good that he did. Thoughts on that? That's just something that kind of stood out to me as wow, we had good kings along the way, but none quite like Hezekiah yet in Judah. And the text even says, since the days of Solomon, there wasn't one quite like Hezekiah. And we're going to see yet another good king before this study is over. Yeah, thoughts? It was just something interesting. I was hoping that someone would say, yeah, and this is why. You know, this is exactly why you see this about Hezekiah. And we also have, again, just to keep before us the list of the prophets during the divided kingdom. In just a couple weeks, we're going to get into the prophets of the of Judah alone. We're going to get into Zephaniah and Nahum and Jeremiah. That's coming just a little bit later in the days of Josiah. So just a list of that, and this is something good for you to kind of keep in mind. The list itself is easy enough to remember, but also remember which prophet was in which kingdom. So we have Jonah, Amos, and Hosea in Israel, and then the others were in Judah. And also to keep in mind the king while they did their work, who was king in the land. So give you an idea of the time frame. All right, a question came up, and I wanted to, just as I was studying, the question came up about Hezekiah and how that his father Ahaz was a good king, or was an evil king. And so where did Hezekiah learn to do good? How did he learn that? Right? And Kevin pointed out 2 Chronicles 29 and 2 Chronicles 26, and there is a link with Hezekiah. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 1, right, and you'll see that Hezekiah became king when he was 25 years old, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Abijah, the daughter of Zechariah. Okay? And if you go back to 2 Chronicles 26, so Zechariah was what relationship? It was his grandfather, right? Okay, so his mother would have been the daughter of Zechariah. And then in chapter 26 and verse 5, you see the evaluation, that overall evaluation of Uzziah in 2 Chronicles 26. And it says, he sought God in the days of Zechariah. And the best I can tell, we don't know a lot about this Zechariah. There are a lot of Zechariahs in the books of Kings and Chronicles, right? As far as I can tell, this is the same Zechariah. The time would certainly fit that, given it's just a couple kings. And this is, as best I can tell, a prophet. Zechariah, and he, Uzziah sought God, and as long as he sought God, God made him prosper. But it was the days of Zechariah who was the prophet who seemed to lead Uzziah toward good. And so I think there was this good influence, perhaps, through the family of Zechariah. Now, we don't know for sure. The Bible doesn't point that out specifically. But at least there's a relatively close link to a good man who could have influenced Hezekiah. If you go back to the other good kings, right? You had Jotham, okay? And Jotham's father was Uzziah, okay? And then you have Uzziah's father was the first in that string of three good kings, Amaziah, right? So we see influence here. And then Amaziah's father was Joash. And you remember about Joash. Joash was preserved. How was Joash preserved? You remember Athaliah was doing the killing of all the sons, right? And you remember it was Jehoshabeath, Jehoiada's wife, who preserved him. And again, he took the throne at a very early age, 7 years old. So there would have been, you know, definitely the influence of Jehoiada over him. So there was definitely some good influence along the way. So I thought that was an interesting question and something that I did off the top of my head. I mentioned it at the closing last time, but I thought I'd look a little bit more into that and see the connection there.
I was told Wednesday night that
Kessler was definitely the mother.
The mother.
The mother, yeah. Definitely the mother, right. The mother did that. Definitely the mother. And then the next good king is Josiah. And with Josiah, we'll study this a little bit more, but I don't know that there's a specific person we can link it to. There's several evil kings along the way, but Josiah likewise took the throne at a very early age. So there had to have been some adult influence over Josiah. But we do see that Josiah had a very tender heart, because even throughout his reign, even, you know, in the 18th year of his reign and beyond, we find that we find Josiah hearing the book of the law, learning a passage that he hadn't heard before, and weeping, and, you know, making those drastic reforms. Josiah, probably the best king Judah ever had after the kingdom divided. So, given his taking of the throne at a very early age, there almost had to have been some adult influence to kind of guide him in the right. But the Bible doesn't mention someone specific to do that. And the one good king that I really couldn't come up with that on is Asa. Asa, so if you look, you've got Jehoshaphat. Asa was his father. And with Asa, you know, his grandmother was Maacah, and you'll remember it specifically says that he removed her from being the queen mother. So there certainly wasn't that same level of good influence in Asa's life. And I think, as best I can tell, Asa perhaps is just an example of Ezekiel 18:14. He saw the wicked ways of his father, and he was not going to go in that. And he went and did good on his own, because he saw the calamity of his own father. And I think, I guess the point that I'm making here in all of this, and I think it's an interesting one, is that, and it's one that our children can definitely understand, and that is the value of influence. By and large, those kings who were good had a good influence in their life. To help them to make that stand for what was right. By and large, that is the case. So there is an extreme value of having a good influence. Likewise, those who were evil, by and large, had an evil influence and evil surroundings that made it easier for them to go and follow after evil. Does that make sense? I hope that was worth... Yes, Rob?
Also, along with that, the point, regardless of whether we have
exactly.
Stand or...
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's a point you can make with Asa, as that it's we're responsible for it, first of all. That's a point that's made throughout Scripture. We're responsible for our own behavior no matter what our surroundings are. We're expected, as in the days of Noah, you know, Noah and his own family, that was it. We're expected to do right no matter what, and we're accountable if we don't. Absolutely. Very good point. And with the case of Asa, I think in this study, Asa shows that it's possible, right? If there are no direct good influences, it's possible. You don't think that, well, everyone around me is bad. I can't help but be bad. No, it's possible. And the Bible has other examples. But here in this story, you know, there is an example of one who was surrounded by evil, but yet determined to be good and determined to do what was right. And, you know, another interesting thing, Hezekiah's reforms. If you look at 2 Chronicles 31 and then verse 1, and that's also recorded in 2 Kings 18 and verse 4, one of the things that Hezekiah did, he went and he broke down the sacred pillars in pieces, cut down the wooden images, threw down the high places. So the other kings, they were good, but they didn't cut down the high places, right? They were good, but didn't cut down the high places, and so on. Hezekiah, that was one of the things he did in his reform. So he didn't stop short, as some of the other kings had done. He went, and not only in Judah, but it mentions in Ephraim and Manasseh as well. He went and did that. So he tore down the high places. And utterly destroyed them. So he went beyond. He went the extra step towards restoring good and removing idolatry from the land. The only other king in Judah that really came close is Asa. The Bible says that Asa tore down the high places, and it also says that Asa did not tear down the high places. And the best explanation I can get for that is that there were high places for idol worship, and then there were also high places which were unauthorized altars for offering sacrifices to Jehovah, and that Asa tore down the idolatrous ones, but kind of left the ones that were unauthorized for the worship of God, and so they were not acceptable either way, because it was mimicking the idolatry around them and not pure worship of Jehovah. But that's the best explanation I can get of that. So Hezekiah went even beyond that and tore down the high places in the land. So I think that's an interesting thing that shows the strength of Hezekiah. So he tore down the high places. He reformed the worship in the temple. So he divided the priests up. And he also led by example. So the worship was awful. And Freddie mentioned in the days of Ahaz how that Ahaz had even moved around the order of things in the temple to the north side instead of the east. And just Ahaz just had really destroyed it, and it had become basically a place of idol worship. So one of Hezekiah's reforms was to restore all of that. And then the people had the responsibility to give, to tithe. And Hezekiah, as best I can tell from reading 2 Chronicles 31, Hezekiah led by example, and he gave of his own. I think that's in verse 3. Yeah, the king also appointed a portion of his possessions for the burnt offerings, for the morning and evening burnt offerings, for the burnt offerings of the Sabbath and the new moons, and set feasts as it is written in the law of the Lord. And then he commanded the people that they should contribute the support, the things that the priests needed. So what happened when he did that? So they began in the third month, and the people began to bring these offerings. And they brought the offerings beginning in the third month, and there started to be this overflow even in the third month. And they kept bringing and bringing and bringing and bringing all the way up through the seventh month. And so they brought the first fruits of grain, the first fruits of the wine, the oil, the honey. They brought oxen and sheep, the tithe of all that they had. And these heaps, they started in the third month, and then they kept on growing as the people kept bringing more. So they had just heaps of things that the people had brought. And so they built storerooms to hold the excess. There were storerooms built for the excess. That's a little missed word there. So there were storerooms built to store the excess. And then after all of this, Hezekiah, He ordered the priests, organized them, and made some organization so that the priests could do their work according to the genealogy and so forth of the priests. And then, I want to look at 2 Chronicles 31 and really verses 20 and 21. Thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good and right and true before the Lord his God. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, in the law and in the commandment to seek his God, he did it with all his heart. And so he prospered. So how did Hezekiah do these things? Wholeheartedly, right? And we're told about other kings that they followed after God, but what? Not with all their heart. Okay? You see that? Not with all their heart. You see that contrast. So I find the story of Hezekiah just to be refreshing. Here we are in the midst of this, one of the darkest times in all of history of Israel and Judah. We've just come off the wickedest king that Judah has ever seen. And then here comes Hezekiah, who serves God with all his heart. And you don't know how much good that you're doing just by doing good. Just you yourself doing good. You don't know how much good you can accomplish in that. Did it ultimately prevent Judah's demise? No. Did it delay it? Absolutely. Did it help the people of the land? When you see the reaction of the people to Hezekiah's example, and you see the reaction of the people to Hezekiah's commandment to bring the offerings, it's almost like there was a group of people who were just tired of the evil and the wicked, and who were ready to do something good. And when they had leadership to put them in that direction, their response was amazing. And I think that there are people around us who are hungry and thirsty to see righteousness. And when we display that and we do the works of God, that their response will be more favorable than we expect. I think that's certainly a true statement. So any thoughts about Hezekiah thus far? We're going to cover some more, but that's really, at this point, about all we're going to do for the history of Hezekiah. He's reigning in Judah when Israel's taken away captive. We're about to shift and go over to the kingdom of Israel now. We're going to get back to Judah after Samaria falls. Right, Assyria comes to try to take Judah as well, and that's in the days of Hezekiah. He's still king when that happens. But let's. Any thoughts about Hezekiah up to this point?
A quick point here. I don't think I'm stretching this too far. I believe this is the first time the priests have actually been paid for doing the Lord's work.
Right.
They would have got their portions out of all this that was brought.
Yeah.
So for the first time in a long time, they're being paid to do the Lord's work versus being paid to lie to the king
mm-hmm.
that good things will come
yeah.
and do him evil, which hopefully would yeah. have. They would be teaching the right thing. And,
yes. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Down the road.
Yeah, and clearly the priests had not been doing their work, and we see that in the prophets as well. The priests are rebuked for not fulfilling their responsibility of teaching the people the laws of God. Very good. And now they have a willing people to sacrifice. They have the support of the king. Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Very good point. Very good point. That is exactly what God wants of us. And we studied it even in Micah. What does the Lord require of you? Right? And, they were asking, what should I give my firstborn as an offering to the Lord? What should I do? Right? And then what did God say? What does He want from you? Just to walk humbly with your God. That's what He wants. Yeah. With all your heart. Very good point. So Hezekiah is only doing what's expected of us. What's really reasonable of us, right? Given what God has done for us. Very good. Any other thoughts about Hezekiah? Alright, let's shift gears to maybe not so pleasant a topic to talk about, and that is Hoshea. Hoshea was an evil king in Israel. The Bible does point out that he wasn't as evil as the other kings in Israel, but still, he was an evil king in Israel. And Shalmaneser was the king, and we'll flip over to 2 Kings chapter 17 to find this information. Shalmaneser was king of Assyria, and Hoshea was subject to him, and he had to pay a tribute every year. Hoshea got tired of paying that tribute, so he decided it would be a good idea to seek some help and maybe have an alliance with So, who was king of Egypt. So he conspired with So, and he didn't pay one year. And as a result of that, Shalmaneser came, took him, put him in prison. And then, after that, Shalmaneser began to seize Samaria. Bob points out in his book that Shalmaneser died before Samaria completely fell, and that Sargon was the king in Assyria when that happened. Sargon's mentioned in Isaiah chapter 20 and verse 1, so secular history does not conflict with what the Bible says here. Shalmaneser began to take Samaria, but Sargon was king when it ultimately fell, and Sargon actually took the captives away, and Isaiah mentioned Sargon as well. So it took three full years, and that would be long years, right? Because the way they seized them, it would get awful in the city, the way they would seize it and not allow any supplies in, no water, no food. It would have been an awful, awful 3 years. And then finally, Samaria actually fell, and that happened. 2 Kings 17 and verse 6 says that happened in the 9th year of Hoshea, that he took Samaria. And you'll notice there, it doesn't mention Shalmaneser, right? So that's very consistent. The king of Assyria. So that would have been Sargon at that point. Took Samaria and carried Israel away to Assyria and placed them in the different places. Alright, so after Samaria fell, Assyria, and this policy, Bob mentions again, I'm no guru with secular history at all, but Tiglath-Pileser, who was the king we've read about and dealt with in Assyria, he instituted the policy of when they would conquer a land, a city, that they would take the people out and take them captive. And really one of the things that they would do is they would remove the people from the city that they were in, and rather than just take them back to Nineveh, what they would do is they would take them and move them to some other land that they had conquered. And the kind of the idea there was to remove any semblance of national pride and national patriotism, that kind of thing. So he would just basically scatter them out to some other place. And that's, in essence, what they did with Israel. They took them and took them to other cities in their empire. And then they would take people from other cities that they had conquered and brought them into Samaria. So Samaria is now being repopulated with whoever Assyria wants to put in there. Okay? And that's what's happening now. And so they brought in people from other nations to live there. And the people who came in, they didn't obey God. They didn't obey God at all. They would have been idolatrous people. That was the way the people lived in that time. And so they came into Samaria and they continued their idolatry. They continued offering sacrifices to their idols, continued worshiping their idols. And God sent lions in the land. And the lions came and killed some of them. And so they sent word back to the king of Assyria of what had happened. That these people, and the way it's worded there in the Bible, they don't know the rituals of the God in that land. And so as a result of their not knowing the rituals of the God, the lions are coming and killing the people. So we need to send someone down to teach them the rituals of that God so that the lions will stop killing them. And again, the Bible does point out that these lions came from God. Okay, this was God punishing them. So it wasn't just this superstitious idea of the Assyrians. Now perhaps that was involved, the superstition of, because they said they don't know the rituals of the gods of that land. So that there was certainly some superstition. But the Bible says God sent the lions in to kill them. God was not pleased with their idolatry. And that makes sense. Why was Israel taken away? We're going to see that a little bit later. Why was Israel taken away? Idolatry, right? So God's not going to tolerate idolatry. Now, certainly expected more of His people who had heard, the law of Moses, but He wasn't going to accept it from the other people as well. I mean, God's justice and fairness come into play here. So He didn't tolerate the idolatry of the people who had come in to take Assyria, to live in Assyria. So He sent a priest from among the people he had taken captive from Samaria. So he sent a priest back to the land to show them, to teach them the rituals. So that priest came to Bethel. Now what would have been at Bethel? Yeah, Jeroboam's golden calf, right? At least, I don't know if the calf still would have been there. The text doesn't point that out. But at least Bethel would have been a place where that worship had been going on for years and years and years, right? And that concept. So who knows exactly what the priest taught them, what his concept would have been of that, given that he was from Samaria, he was taken from Samaria and sent back to Bethel. But the text says he taught them the rituals. He taught them, you know, how to worship God. And if you'll notice, Second Kings 17, verse 29, every nation continued to make gods of their own. It says verse 28 that priest taught them how they should fear the Lord, and it covers, you know, the people from the different lands. Verse 32, so they feared the Lord, but from every class they appointed for themselves priests of the high places who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. Verse 33, they feared the Lord yet served their own gods according to the rituals of the nations from among whom they were carried away. And to this day, they continue practicing their former rituals. And I think verse 34 really sums this up. So they tried to worship God and their idols. You see that? They tried to do both. That's not acceptable, right? And if you look at verse 33, right, what does it say about them? They feared the Lord, but what?
Serve
their own gods, okay? And I think the idea is there was this fear. This, because God had actually sent the lions to kill them. So there was this fear of God, but it wasn't the true fear of God that is the beginning of wisdom that the Bible talks about. Because notice verse 34. What does verse 34 say? Exactly. To this day, they continue practicing their former rituals. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances or the law of the commandment of the Lord, which He had given to the children of Jacob, which He named Israel. And so, they didn't fear the Lord. They feared the Lord, but they didn't fear the Lord. I think that sums up the attitudes of the other nations who had come into the land. Yes, yes. The passage in James comes to mind. Friendship with the world is enmity with God. And I think this is illustrating that fearing God and serving some other master, whether it's an idol or whether it's the world, you don't fear the Lord when you do that. I think that's exactly right. Very good point. That's right. That is right. That is right. We have to remove the idolatry, the world, completely from our hearts. And the close of that chapter, verse 41, they feared the Lord, yet served their carved images. Also their children and their children's children have continued doing as their fathers did, even to this day. And another interesting point, you'll notice how that Assyria brought in these people from all the other nations into Samaria. There would have been some of the very poorest of the Israelites who were left in the city, who weren't taken away captive. And so they would have intermarried with these other nations, and that would have created that race called the Samaritans that we read about in Jesus' day in the New Testament. You know, you had the Jews and the Samaritans, and they hated one another. And, you know, I think the story in John 4 of the woman at the well bears that out, how they hated one another, the Samaritans and the Jews. And you know, this explains some of that background, that the Samaritans were really kind of a mixed race, not really Jews, but all the other nations had come in and intermarried with the very, very poor Jews who were left. Mm-hmm.
In Leviticus 26, God had warned people that if they didn't obey Him, He would destroy them. And then
yes.
So they had known God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good, very good. Very good. And that's a good segue into the first half of, or basically 7 through about 23 of 2 Kings 17. Why was Israel taken captive? First off, way back in the law of Moses, in the days of Moses, they were told, when you go into this land, you know, if you follow the gods that are in that land, the land will vomit you out. It'll spew you out. God will not leave you in that land if you do not obey Him. And as Angela said, the bringing in of the wild beast to destroy them. So Israel was taken captive. Here we're given a nice inspired commentary on why this happened. Why did Samaria fall? Why was Israel taken away out of the land? And you look at verse 7, why was it? Because they sinned against God, the same God who had brought them up out of Egypt, who had delivered them from Pharaoh, 2 Kings 17 and verse 7. That's why. And they walked in the statutes of the gods of the nations that they were supposed to have driven out. They followed after those gods and served those idols. That's why that they were taken captive. The text here also points out, you know, they set up sacred pillars. But look at verse 9. They tried to do some of these things in secret. So they sinned secretly. They did against the Lord their God things that were not right. They built the high places. And, you know, I think certainly as you're teaching the children, this is a point that children definitely need to get in their minds. And that is the caution against secret sin. The children can understand that God is watching them even when mom and dad aren't. Children can definitely understand that concept. And these secret sins were not secret to God. I think that's definitely a point you teachers can make to the children as you're going through that. They set up high places to worship idols. The other thing is they ignored the warnings of the prophets. God sent prophets to them and they ignored those warnings. They stiffened their necks just as their fathers had stiffened their necks, the text says, even though the prophets warned them. So God didn't just say, I told you before you took the land, now you're worshiping idols, I'm taking you out. No, God gave them, we see the long-suffering and patience of God and the righteousness and justice and fairness of God and that He sent prophets. Not all of them are written, but you know we know of Elijah, we know of Elisha, we know of the written ones, Isaiah and Micah, who warned them, and they ignored the warnings. And then it says they offered human sacrifices. They caused their children to pass through the fire to these gods. And again, you know, that's something that they had been specifically warned against both in Leviticus 18 and in Deuteronomy 18. They had been very specifically warned against do not offer, do not cause your children to pass through the fire. Do not offer human sacrifices. It was a very specific thing that God had told them not to do. And then ultimately, they rejected the covenant that God had made with them. That's ultimately, that when you get down to it, they rejected that covenant. And that's why that they were taken away captive into the land. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Not mm-hmm. And they're always known by God. Mm-hmm. Context tells us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, secret sin is solved in the heart. Yeah. The person who's committing it knows. Not secret to that person. Very good. Very good. These people knew better than the secret sins they were doing. Yes. Other thoughts?
Verse 18 uses fear.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time you see God is angry, God is angry. Mm-hmm.
Very good. And I think His actions demonstrate how very angry He was in the nature of the fall of Samaria and how that Assyria totally just wipe them out as a people, really. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And Judah doesn't last a lot longer. Good thoughts. Appreciate your comments. Any more? Yes, Brent.
2 Chronicles 36, if God has compassion on His people, talk about sending the prophets over and over. There, sending the prophets to His people, God is angry. There was nobody to take them away.
Right. Very good. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Even before, they're going to be like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you.